So hello and welcome to the 43rd episode of The Undermind, and my exclusive guest today is Dan Gamb. Hi Dan, how are you doing?
Doing well, thanks for having me, Shanko.
So yeah, there were some stuff around scheduling, but I'm glad you could make it, and let's put a positive spin on that, and this is your own exclusive episode, and all pent-up frustration, anger, and all feedback from the 41 episodes that you haven't been able to attend, you can just pour out right now.
I'm not feeling angry about anything.
That's good to hear. And I think the first question, as it is always, how you've been. I think we had, I don't know if it was 2 or 3 weeks since the last podcast, but yeah, how are you doing nowadays?
Doing well. The weather in New York City has gotten pretty nice. It's very sunny. So yeah, feeling good.
Kind of rainy here. And let's see what's the news and what's going around and about. I think not many things have happened. The first one is the SSCIT moving to the new server. But according to Chertyshky, so where was I? Yeah, SSCIT moving. And with that, I don't know what's the SSCIT's future, but it's technically won't be affiliated with any university anymore. I don't know if that opens up any new possibilities. I think SSCIT was pretty open about anything so far. What do you think about this?
I hope everything continues to run smoothly. It's a great service. It is a fundamental part of this community. It brings a lot of people in. I hope it continues running smoothly.
Yeah, me too. Well, this is not just a fundamental, this is the reason for the community existing in the first place. Well, that and daunting as organizations, but yeah, we wouldn't be here without it. So yeah, since this is your exclusive episode, I wanted to do a little bit in-depth interview with you. How did you get into bot development? What is your background? Of course, don't go into too much detail if you're not comfortable doing so. Where did you originally start developing your own bot? How did you find the scene in the first place? Well, everything. Just feel free to talk about it.
Sure. So going back to high school, I started playing Brood War in I think my freshman year of high school. Started playing over the summer with some of my coworkers and got really into it. And a little bit later than that, I started kind of learning to program a little bit, not really using kind of any standard languages, but I would do things like script things for games, or I competed in this programming game called Robot Battle, one of many games where you program tanks to, you know, drive around and shoot things. And then after college, I worked on a Warcraft 3 mod called Bandits, which it was a mod of the multiplayer game. And then in order to help test it, in order to help fill up games, because it was a 4-player game, I wrote AI, custom AI for that to play this Warcraft 3 mod. And it was a little bit after that, in late 2009 and maybe early 2010, that I first came across the Brood War API. It was a very early version at the time. And I tinkered around with it a little bit. I didn't really make a bot that could play. I did make a Lua wrapper, so you could write a bot in Lua. That's still floating around the internet and on Google Code. There's definitely better Lua wrappers now, but if you want to check out the old Bloppy Lua from 2010 with my MS Paint logo, it's still floating around the Google Code archives. And I didn't really come back into it until very late 2016. 2016 was kind of a rough year for me. My father passed away. I broke my collarbone. My father's landlords took me to court over some things. So it was kind of a rough year. And then in the new year of 2017, I'd been taking some time off, and I was, you know, for the first time in a little while, kind of free to explore and work on anything I wanted to. And I thought, hey, you know, I just come across SSCIAT, I think from a Reddit post, and had been tuning in, watching the bots. So, hey, why not, you know, let's make a little bot, take a couple weeks, and make it a fun little project. So I made the first version of Purple Wave starting January 2017. And I had to do a simple strategy, which I was surprised to not see any bots doing, which was a proxy 2-gate. 2 gateways in the middle of the map, rally zealots, prefer right-clicking workers. And it was a teeny little bot in 2 weeks, and I dropped in the ladder, and it was taking names. It was taking some games off of top bots, which is very satisfying, a lot of fun. And I started getting a little more into it, building a bit more on top of that, and started learning more about the scene, more about what projects were out there, what people were working on. And one of the things I discovered was the amount of the like academic research and interest that was going into it. In particular, I think it was around late January, early February that I discovered that for example, Facebook was working on it. So I made it a goal to myself to try to win some of the tournaments in 2017, and then maybe, you know, go work with one of the companies that was going to be working on StarCraft. So I did that. I came back from I worked on the bot pretty full time for the spring of 2017. Took a couple weeks off for a vacation, and then came back. And then leading up to the CIG deadline, just kind of morning, noon, and night, nonstop, just driving to try to win that tournament. And wound up having a pretty good summer competitively. I wound up taking third place CIG, second place AID, and then, you know, from there all things followed. But that's kind of how I got started, how I got into it. And while I was working at the spot, I was getting myself back into Brood War because I hadn't really followed the game in 20 years. So yeah, that's kind of how I got back into it. Started watching SSCIT late 2016, started working on a bot early 2017, started getting back into the pro StarCraft meta early 2017, and followed from there.
In the meantime, sorry, I was stretching and apparently I didn't have push to talk on my mic, so it sounded like I was yawning. So that's no way reflection of what you just said, if you listen back to the podcast. So yeah, that's funny. I think I will leave that in.
All part of the show's flavor.
Yeah. So yeah, 2016 was a rough year for me. I actually almost broke my neck that year, so I can relate to the injury part, not the other ones. But yeah. Regarding bot development, I think that was the year when I started. No, I think that was 2016 or 2017 when I first found out about SSCIT. So yeah, around the same time, actually. I think maybe a little bit later.
Yeah, definitely a very fun time to be involved. A lot of folks joined the scene around that time. I think like McRae started working on his bot a week or two before I did. A lot of authors were joining the scene just right around then, and it grew very quickly, especially in 2017. The level of play started improving very rapidly, and since then it's been a very exciting time to work on bots.
Do you still cry at night because Bandits didn't become as famous as Dota?
You know, I'm holding out hope that one of these days it's going to take off like a rocket ship and I'll be the next Ice Frog.
You will be just discovered. Right, coding in some dark alley for pennies.
Yeah, you know, we'll code for food.
Yeah, that's a very, very familiar state of being for us programmers. Just coding for pennies to making ends meet. Alrighty, let's jump to the next topic, which is news about Schnell, which is still pretty much all I'm doing nowadays, and that therefore the podcast will be in a large part about that. I prepared actually a few more non-Schnell topics, but let's just interleave them and start with that. So we have a leaderboard now, and You can see the ranked plays, and the ranked play is starting to take shape. One of the problems we have is, to my surprise, relatively few people play ranked games. Like I should say 90 or 95% of the games are practice games. Or is this only surprising for me?
I personally don't think it's too surprising. I think when you look at a lot of the way that people play games, including StarCraft, a lot of it is unranked play. For example, like the StarCraft II co-op being a very big part of the player base there. It's not something that's as visible or as televised. But you know, I think Blizzard realized it wastes like a lot of people play this co-op mode. This more casual mode. A lot of people play this game more casually. So I'm not surprised to see happening with Brood War as well. I think also, you know, if you've been following bots a little bit, you might have seen specific bots that you want to play against, or you want to kind of get feel what it's like to use the software, or you know, go back to 1.16. So I'm not at all surprised that most of the games are unranked. I think people who are looking for a ranked player are often going to be doing against humans. And then bots are kind of a separate challenge or a testing ground. So lots of different ways to play. And I think it's just like any other game or environment where I think most play tends to be unranked play.
It is not surprising that the majority is unranked play. It's just the ratios themselves. For example, since yesterday we had less than 20 ranked matches and many, many more practice matches. So yeah, that is surprising to me. But it is what it is, and it shows what the player base actually wants, which is more practice games or more features related to practice play. So I think that should be the focus moving forward.
Yeah, I think one of the unique aspects about playing against bots is that you could play against a bot repeatedly and kind of refine what you're doing as you go along. If you find a bot that's doing something that's particularly effective against you, you can tweak your approach and try your approach multiple times. Versus, you know, if you see something strange on ladder, you may not see that again for weeks or months. You may not have another chance to alter what you do and tweak it and improve against it. So I think that aspect of the single player challenge playing against bots is something that's unique and special to Schnell. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people were taking advantage of that.
Yeah, and I heard that back that it's so good because I can do that and I can practice without ladder anxiety, and not just ladder anxiety but ladder toxicity and just griefing. And I'm really glad that this is the feedback I got, because this is what I wanted. This is what I wanted to provide to people. You can go there and not getting verbally abused by 12-year-olds all the time. And that if you have a very limited free time that you want to devote to playing Brood War, that is a huge plus.
Ladder anxiety is very real. I experienced it myself.
I never actually played ladder seriously. Like, I played a few ladder games to test out stuff or just fun with people, but I don't know. I mostly watch it and cast games. I think I casted more games in my life than I played. How weird is that, right?
Things you might never have expected yourself to be doing.
No, actually not. Actually, my career in casting, if you could call it that, was literally that I was doing this podcast and Chertichke asked me if I wanted to do the weekly SSCIT casts, and yeah, I do. And I actually had this conversation with someone lately. Someone asked me, like, with teary eyes, that how did you become a caster? And I never expected this to be any kind of, not even high, but any kind of bar to be. It's like you open OBS, you put a replay on the screen, hit record and say words into the microphone. Pretty much that's it. And you put it on the internet or stream it. That's all you require to be a caster. To be a good one, I don't know. I'm not a good caster, so I can't say anything about that.
Well, I think you've shown multiple times if you go out and make something and promote it, and it's got some value to people, some interest to people, that you can build an audience and create something out of nothing.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. I mean, when I say I'm not a good caster, people are watching my cast, so it can't be that bad. But I'm not a professional caster, nor I will ever be. I don't know the game in that much depth. I could not do what certain more experienced casters, for example, Rapid or Arthosis, can do, which is like just see the game through. And I think that comes with just practice. If you play the game, you analyze the game, and you do it more, then you eventually have to get at least decent at it, at casting. But that's kind of true for anything and everything. If you put enough time in it, then you will probably inevitably get good at it.
StarCraft is definitely something you can learn a lot by watching and a little bit by doing, and even maybe more a lot of it by doing. But really, you can learn a lot just by watching pro play, hearing commentary on pro games, watching replays, stepping through them, and seeing how things go. You know, at this point, I feel very confident in my understanding of StarCraft strategy, even myself with my own hands. I'm not as good as my bot. But backing up to 2017, before I started getting back into the pro scene, I really didn't know that very much. I had played a lot, but I was 20 years out of date with the pro meta. I didn't really know what the arc of a game in 2020 looked like. I had to relearn all that. I had to watch the pro games. I would watch all the ASL matches, all the KSL matches, other YouTube streams, the translated pro Korean videos, things like that, and built up that knowledge from not much. There's like some very basic ideas in real-time strategy games that are pretty universal across titles. You know, the aspect of it being an exponential growth curve of you make more money, you generate more income producers, you get even more money, and then if someone has an army, when you do have an army, you die. And that's kind of the fundamentals of real-time strategy games. And then the details you can kind of pick up by watching pro games and seeing the arcs of those games and what makes them tick and how people win.
I think Day9 summarized it the best when he said, fundamentally, StarCraft is about having more stuff. And that's so simple, but so sometimes so hard to grasp that, yes, it is about that. You have more stuff, the enemy, then you will probably win. And it's not some high-end abstract concept that you can't wrap your head around.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the core of the game. Have more stuff, make more money, spend more money, have more stuff, don't throw away your units, and eventually you can just attack, move your opponent's base, and walk away.
Something like that. Speaking of casts and replays, we do have a replay browser now. I don't know how much. Have you been just watching games for fun? I'm curious about that.
On the average week over the past 3 years, I've watched a lot of games. Over the past month or two, not as much. But in general, yeah, I'll watch, for example, Purple Waves games on Basil. I usually only watch losses because those are the interesting ones. But yeah, I think on the average year over the past 3 years, I probably watched 5 to 10 replays.
I specifically meant the Schnell replay browser.
Not too much. I watched a couple of my games against the bots I played on Schnell when I did the replay pack, playing against all the top 20 bots. But I haven't used the replay browser yet.
Okay, so you can do that now. And it's good. And I managed to, it works with OpenBW as well. And what I'm thinking about, and first, before I forget, there is still a replay contest going on. I think I should advertise it a little bit more. Rapid will cast your best replays, and I have I agreed with him that we will do a quite long cast about Schnell replays. So feel free to submit them, and we will just pick the best ones. If there are not enough submitted, then we will just go through random replays and pick the best ones. And if you want to get featured, then you should probably post it on the Schnell Discord.
I want to get on that. I should play some silly games, get those replays in.
Yeah, it have to be entertaining. It doesn't matter if the bot wins or not. Preferably do post some bot wins, but it if it's an interesting game or just an exciting game, yeah, sure. It is a possibility that Rapid will cast it.
For folks who don't know Rapid is one of the pro ASL casters. I think he's based in Korea. If he isn't, then he was for some period of time. Really big in the scene, and I think it'd be really fun to have him cast all these games. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I really like his casting style. You can look him up by the name Rapid or Rapid Casting. I'm gonna post the link in the chat. And yeah, he is in Korea. He is in Korea, and I don't know how can he do all the casts in different times, because that must be a very messed up sleep schedule.
Yeah, it's a heck of a time difference.
Yeah, I've been in Asia lately, and jet lag is one of the worst things ever. Maybe I'm especially sensitive to it, but I don't want to do it ever again. Don't want to experience the jet lag. I do want to go to Asia in the future, though.
Yeah, so sometimes jet lag doesn't hit me at all, but sometimes it hits me like a brick. I think it depends on just the direction and the number of hours.
They say that it is much, much worse if you go towards the east than to the west. I don't know. I never. I guess that's my personal experience as well, but I never traveled that far. Only this trip.
I find it tough going from the US to Europe just because that kind of requires you to sleep earlier, and I'm terrible with that.
I'm terrible at sleeping in general.
Comes with the profession, I think.
Yeah, maybe, excessive caffeine usage. In the meantime, I'm searching for the picture. I think we talked about that there is a snail plushie in the works. I think that was, in last cast we talked about that, but since then I have a new version and I do want to show it on stream. So just keep talking until I find the picture, please.
Gee, no pressure. Just keep talking without a prompt.
Yes, of course. It's like you wanted an exclusive episode, right? Here you have it. Come on. Disclaimer, Dan did not want an exclusive episode.
Shaco asked me like 5 minutes before the cast, "Hey, is it all right if it's just you on the podcast?"
Lies.
Yeah, absolutely what I signed up for, Shaco. No, it's all good. We're having a good time.
Yeah, and I'm terrible at multitasking, so I will pull up the image in a second.
We have a request from Impy to talk about Zerg bots. So, Impy, what's on your mind? What about Zerg bots would you like to discuss?
Yeah, we are taking audience questions.
Impy is asking why Zerg bots are not doing so well, and Yeager's asking any plans for my Zerg bot. I'll answer the second question first, because the reason why Zerg bots aren't doing so well is because I haven't been working on mine. I got to put my money where my mouth is. The big arc of what I have planned for Purple Swarm, the Zerg version of my bot, is getting a new. I'll talk about pretty much all the plans. There's nothing secret there. I'm working on a new building placer. I worked on the new building placer about a year ago. Didn't wind up merging it in just because I had a series of tournament deadlines coming up, and it wasn't quite in a stable version. But I want to get that new building placer in for a couple of reasons. One is right now Purple Wave actually cannot place macro hatcheries. It can only place hatcheries at base expansions, which you can get sort of far doing just that, but late game it becomes a real hindrance when the number of hatcheries you need outpaces the number of bases you can kind of spatially afford to take over and defend. So after installing the new building placer, then Purple Swarm will be able to support macro hatcheries and all the strategies that go along with it. So I've been holding off on kind of any rebuilding of Purple Swarm strategies until I can actually place the macro hatcheries, so I don't have to wind up working on some kind of compromise changes where it takes five bases for five hatcheries instead of placing macro hatcheries. And after that, working on kind of more meta game plans, especially for the Zerg versus Terran and Zerg versus Protoss matches. Right now, the strategy selection that they have is kind of limited by the number of hatcheries it can place, so it's kind of more early game focused. There are a lot of different varieties of cheese, and there are some kind of basic mid to late game transitions, but they're not polished. They obviously can't place macro hatcheries, so the longer the game goes on, the more trouble they wind up in. But that's overall the arc. Get the building placer in, and then work on more meta strategies. And then the kind of last big piece for the Zerg play is being able to have abusive Mutalisk micro. So Purple Swarm has some ability to stack Mutalisks and harass with them, but it's not very good at navigating obstacles. If there's a turret between the Mutalisks and a harassable worker line, it's not too likely to find its way around those turrets to get to the workers. So that's something I think is important for Zerg to be able to play properly, because the threat of Mutalisks and forcing the opponent to respect that threat is a big part of how Zerg is balanced on modern maps. And the fact that Zergs aren't doing that right now, to answer Impy's original question of why Zergs are having trouble, is if you can't pose that threat, then the enemy can just kind of move out with their army, kill you, get away with a lot of things, not building turrets. They can build more barracks and factories and expansions instead of building turrets because they don't have to respect the threat of Mutalisks walking around your defenses. So that's a big part of what's planned. And so while I've been talking, Shanko's had this Schnell plushie up on the screen for about 3 minutes. So you want to talk about that, Shanko?
Just gaze upon it. That's just to be gaze upon its magnificence and stare into its eyes. I don't know. There is not much to talk about. It will be available to order soon, as soon as we work out some details. But basically in 1 week or two, if everything goes well.
It looks truly majestic, truly adorable, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to squish it when you're either having a bad time on the StarCraft ladder or trying to debug some code that just won't work.
Absolutely. It's a proven stress reliever, and just by having one, you will live to 150 years. It's 100% guaranteed. If you don't, then you get your money back.
So we've got a great question from Ketrock in chat, who says, I'm from the StarCraft 2 AI scene. Tell me everything I need to know about the Brood War AI scene in 2 minutes.
Allow me. All you need to do is that it is superior to the SC2 AI scene in every way, shape, and form. Thank you.
I'll take the less Starky end of that, because I think the StarCraft 2 AI scene is really fantastic, and there are some aspects of it which I'm very jealous of. There's some very high quality videos coming out of the StarCraft 2A scene. Really great casting as well. A lot of innovation happening at the same time, a lot of bots in development. Really great stuff going on. And for what's different about the Brood War AI scene, I think one has just been around longer. The fact that people have been making StarCraft 1 bots since 2009, 2010, there's been a long time for these bots to develop. And when I watch the StarCraft 2 bots, I definitely see them following along the arc of growth and the skill development that StarCraft 1 bots followed. But I think they're a little less far along in some respects. One of the things I've noticed is that like the combat decisions in StarCraft 2 bots aren't quite at the level of StarCraft 1 bots, which is just a matter of time. You know, it's taken many years to build up this scene, so the bots are able to test against bots that have been in development for 10 years, for example, in the case of a bot like Krazio. One thing that what I really like about the StarCraft 1 scene, which I've recommended a few times, that StarCraft 2 follow a bit more, is you can download all the bots. You can download and test against all the bots. So any bot that's on the ladder, you can download and run locally. And being able to do that definitely speeds up the iteration time. For example, if you want to, if there's an opponent that's doing something that you can't otherwise test against, maybe they're using some sort of harassment technique or an uncommon build, and you want to improve your bot's play against that, it's way easier to do that locally. So one quick example, let's say you're having trouble against bots that are going, proxy Reaper, for example, to use a StarCraft 2 example. Let's say the first thing you want to do is detect when they're going proxy Reaper. And, you write some code to detect that, and then you upload in the ladder, and then a ladder game gets played, and then you find out in the replay, okay, I didn't detect that, something went wrong. Well, it'd be nice to be able to debug that locally. It'd be nice to be able to set up your debugger locally and find that out. It'd be nice to be able to look at your log files immediately and kind of have that quick iteration cycle. So I think the ability to download and run all the bots in StarCraft 1 scene is really valuable. I think it's something that should be universal in these kinds of environments. Another is that a lot of the bots are open source. I think more of the StarCraft 1 bots are open source, including a lot of the top bots. Which is very nice, because one of the ways you learn is by reading source code from other bots. Before I even wrote the first line of code at Purple Wave, I'd already looked at a lot of the other top bots, read their source code, and got a lot of ideas and used those to inspire my own. And so that's really part of how bots get better. Authors look at what people have done before. They're able to recycle and adopt those techniques and waste less time figuring out things that people have already figured out. So to me, those are two really special parts about the Brood War AI scene, the ability to download all the bots, the open sourceness of it. But other than that, I think the scenes have more in common than they have different. A lot of people who are really excited to make bots and share them, to talk about what techniques they're using, really great casting on both sides, really great tournaments and events and ladders. Both really great scenes.
Snark aside, of course, I have no problem with the SC2 AI scene. I've been collaborating with some of the people there, and I quite like them. And what I would like to add that some of the SC2 stuff have really great production values, like I don't know the name, but the show when they analyze replays, and generally it's just a well made production. So it is a great scene, and I wish that we can collaborate more in the future. I already know about several bot authors who are active in both scenes, and some bot authors said that their bots kind of work in both games, which I'm skeptical about, but hey, if they tried it out, I can't argue.
I want to hop in and highlight something that Jaegers is mentioning in chat, which is how StarCraft 1 has developed a lot of tooling over the years, some really great libraries. Jaegers is highlighting SC Docker, a Dockerized installation of StarCraft that lets you, for the command line, run games, get results very easily. Jaegers himself has written a number of libraries for Java bots, Bytekeeper as well. It's written the Agent StarCraft simulation library, which has a bunch of tools like Combat Simulator, I think KD Trees, things like that. And the C++ world for StarCraft 1 bots is also very mature. Terrain analysis libraries, combat simulators, multiple of each. So the maturity of the libraries have been developed over time makes it very easy to get started with your bot and get up and running without having to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, just basically the benefit of being around longer. And I hope that the SC2AS scene can use a lot of stuff, or maybe just apply the path, apply that the knowledge that we already did. Well, the Brood War AI scene already figured out, I should say, and maybe we will have a quicker learning curve. I don't know, a quicker advancement of bot skill in SC2, just because of this reason.
Another difference between the two scenes is the kind of nature of StarCraft 1 being this kind of fixed version software it's not seeing any updates, but that's both a pro and a con. For StarCraft 2, it's nice that you have an evolving metagame, that the game is constantly being balanced, things like that. But for bot development, there's a lot of advantages to having a fixed version. One of those is that bots that were released in 2013 still run. So you can have these comparisons of bots over time. If you go on to SSCAIT, there are bots that were last updated in 2013. They're up there and running, and some of them are still very strong. And it's nice to have that tradition going forward, that you can test against all these other bots and compare progress over the long term. Whereas in StarCraft 2, there are breaking changes in the API. Sometimes a new version comes out, which will impact bot development, disrupt things a little bit. And then bots themselves kind of need to be, in some cases, republished or recompiled for newer versions. So it's very nice in Brood War scene that we're on this fixed version, that things continue to keep running year after year without authors necessarily having to be present, that the bots are with us and keep contributing to the scene long after their last update is made.
Well, yeah, a fixed version is definitely advantage here, but I don't know how exactly SC2 deals with it. Does it run like the SC2 bots always run with the latest version of the game, and it's not a separate instance or anything? I haven't looked into it in depth. If that's the case, then yeah, that might cause problems. And the SC2 patches will be coming. Oh, and apparently the SC2 Linux API also has the advantage of not being updated. Well, there you have it. But I don't think that's the thing that we were talking about, strictly speaking.
Yeah, there's definitely pros and cons and little pains that come with each of these setups. Tier and Ketchark are pointing out that the Linux client hasn't been updated in a long time, so the SC2 on Linux API is out of date compared to the Windows API, which is regularly updated. And then compare that to the Brood War scene, where you have your choice of like a native StarCraft on Windows, or running Containerizer in a VM on Linux, or using Open Brood War on Linux, but not having an officially supported version that runs natively on Linux. So pros and cons to both definitely poses some work for people who want to run cross-platform and keep everything running smoothly.
I've always wondered if we can do some kind of continuous integration with bots. Obviously, that would require a certain kind of unit tests. Well, unit tests in an abstract sense, that you upload your bot and there is a series of tests that your bot needs to perform, like work on every map, beat the stock AI, etc. And I know that's a lot of work, but I think SCDocker can be a good base for that. And on Schnell there is kind of a test for that, but it's a little bit finicky at the moment.
I'll add another thing that's kind of special in the Brood War scene is the fact that Open Brood War exists. Open Brood War being an open source re-implementation of the StarCraft 1 engine. And for example, a lot of the replays you'll see of cast are from the Open Brood War replay viewer, which can faithfully take a replay and then play it back. But that also allows for moddability, that you can go in and modify the display of the engine. For example, at Facebook, we made Cherry Viz, the visualizer on top of the Open Brood War replay viewer that lets you generate a log file from your bot and to display things like a heat map or graphs or logs synchronized with the replay on top of it, which lets you really dig in and see what your bot's doing in real time. Compare that to having to debug just from the API. If you want to draw things on the screen, if you want to have graphics overlaid on what your bot is doing, you have to do that in real time. There's not a built-in way to do that with replays. So the hackability of Open Brood War is another really special thing for the scene.
Oh yeah, we can basically do anything with the game at this point. And yeah, we had 22 years now to do it. And actually people were doing it really early, like the early 2000s, people were already modding the game. Yeah, the internet wasn't really a thing back then. I mean, it was, but like a nationwide rollout of broadband internet wasn't a thing. Let's phrase it that way. And yes, speaking of bots, I think the long-term goal of us, and I think maybe the SC2 bot authors, is have a bot or multiple bots that can beat the highest level of humans consistently and reliably. Let's say our goal is to have a Grandmaster level bot. Would you agree?
You know, I think anyone who works on projects this scene has their own goals. And I think, yeah, improving the level of play is one of them. But hey, some people just want to have a good time, make bots that do funny things, make bots that do creative things. I think bot development is really a form of creative expression. And everyone brings their own kind of personality to the style to which they develop their bots and what the bots do. And some people like building useful libraries and frameworks that are used by other people more than they like making a bot themselves. So it's nice that the community allows all these different forms of participation. Certainly, like my own goal is for my bot to play as strong a game as possible, to win tournaments, but I also like for it to do fun things, to do things like, you know, meme openings and things that are fun to watch. Happy Vision, for example, on the SSCIT stream. So the scene is definitely not exclusive to just the goal of achieving strong play.
No, it is not. It is not. You're right. But it is one of the most pronounced long-term goals. Maybe I should put it that way. At least that is how I see it. And on Schnell, I do want bots that eventually can beat, not Grandmasters, but will be better against humans, better and better against humans.
My dream is for one day for my bot to cheese out Artosis and get him to make salty faces on stream.
Oh yeah, that's nice. Well, McRave made him make the face, so that's already an achievement.
Yeah, he got a little bit of stress out of Artosis, but he did using macro play, which is altogether way too honorable and upright for my taste. I want to do something really, truly filthy in-game. I have some ideas what I think it could be done very well by a bot, but I'm not going to give those away.
Okay, I really hope we will see that on stream. And I think competition drives innovation, so I want first of all, people play more ranked games, please, so we have more data and can beat you better. That's one of the key entry points, but I think something has started in that general direction. Even with practice games, you can improve your bot just by viewing those, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. For viewing replays is one of the best ways to see what your bot is doing and what you could be doing better. I think you're making a big mistake if you want to improve your bot and are not watching these replays very carefully, or if you're not, you know, super strong in StarCraft strategy, not having someone who is review those replays in collaboration with you to identify what you could be doing better.
I think some more visibility would be nice, and I've been thinking that maybe we should organize a separate cast of Schnell games. Someone asked me if Schnell games will be featured in the weekly SSEIT casts, and I think the answer should be a hard no. because SSCIT is its own thing, and it's about bot versus bot matches, and we shouldn't, maybe a few matches or something, but no, these are separate projects with separate goals, interconnected, and of course the scene is largely the same, but that might not be the truth in the long term. And yeah, it's just I know we disagree on this, but I think bot versus bot and bot versus human play will diverge a lot in the future.
For anyone interested in the topic, the last episode of The Undermined gets into that in pretty in depth, and my view is pretty clear that the play will converge towards human play before possibly diverging. But definitely a lot of the differences between bot and human play right now are result of bot-specific incentives, bot event-specific incentives, and technical limitations that we're going to get to closer to human meta before, you know, any particular bot shenanigans that humans can pull off bring us beyond that.
Yeah, no disagreements on that part, the latter part. And back to the Impis question about Zerg bots, I wrote down some thoughts about that. I feel that in some aspects it is harder to write a well-performing Zerg bot, and two main reasons. First of all, you have a larva / drone economy on top of the regular StarCraft economy with Zerg, and you have to keep that in mind anytime you do something with Zerg. Second, Zerg units are much more specialized than other ones. The prime counter example is the Dragoon, which is pretty much good against anything. It is a jack of all trades, and it's pretty good against many units. And then you have like the Zergling or the Mutalisk, which has a much more narrower purpose than the Goon. It can only target air, or well, Mutalisks can target air and ground both, but like Mutalisks' main role currently is harass. They can't really take equal fights with pretty much anything. But likewise, Zerglings are ground attack units. They do that well, but yeah, that's it. And that means that you kind of need to achieve a combined arms approach to be really good with Zerg, and that's hard to do with a bot. What do you think about this?
You know, I think you've cited some things which are specifically difficult about Zerg, but I think there's things that are specifically difficult about all the races. I'll cite as one piece of evidence that the fundamentals of the game, the basic logistics are the hard part, being that a lot of the bots which have branched out and taken on another race tend to perform almost as well as the parent bot very quickly thereafter. That the difference between, for example, a Banana Brain and a Krona in terms of time commitment may not be that much, but Krona is still a very strong bot that is only a couple of ranks below Banana Brain. You see that as well with the Purple Wave family of bots that have put way more work into the Protoss than the Terran or Zerg, but the Terran or Zerg are still, you know, number 14, 15 on the ladder or so. You see, for example, like McGrave Z is also, you know, rising the ladder pretty quickly, things like that. So I don't think it's a ton that's specific to Zerg. And although, yeah, you have to face the decision of whether to make drones or not drones, you have, for example, easier units to micro. Zerg units are super responsive. They tend to do exactly what you tell them to. If you tell like a Zergling to go here, it goes here. Compare that to a Dragoon, which are notoriously very unintelligent units, very clunky units. A lot of times they'll bump into each other, they'll get stuck on things. You'll tell it to move somewhere, it'll wander around back and forth, getting its head shot off like an idiot. And it's actually very hard to debug that kind of thing, where if you issue a command to a unit with the bot and it does something different than what you expected, you have to wonder whether it's the engine or whether it's the bot, whether your bot is telling it to do the wrong thing, or the engine, or you told it to do what you intended, and then you wind up doing something different. And it's actually very hard when you're writing rules-based bots to account for the vagaries of the engine, where like as a human, you kind of get, okay, I command my unit to do this. I didn't quite do it. I'm going to adjust my click to kind of get it working. To write code which does that is very tough, because it's hard to detect when things are going wrong based on the command you issued not being followed as intended. So those kinds of issues that Dragoon suffer from, that Goliath suffer from, that Vulture suffer from for sure, that's harder to do compared to Zerg units, which are very responsive, very fluid, Dragoons, for example, getting stuck is something that if you're writing a bot from scratch is something that's very annoying to contend with. To actually take that shot with Dragoon and then retreat without canceling the attack animation or the next attack animation and then losing cooldown time, it's hard to do. It's not really a problem that you face nearly as much with Zerg units, which have very short attack animations. I'd say like Hydralisks are one of the easiest units to micro in the game. They have a very short attack animation. They move very fluidly. They turn pretty readily. They don't get stuck very much. Mulisks for a bot are also very smooth. There's, you know, some things you could do a little better or worse, but you get competent behavior very easily. So that's something which I think Zerg has an easier time of than the other races. Their units are just more responsive. So I really think it's the issues I've cited in the last episode of one, the Zerg strategy is just not being up to par with the Terran and Protoss strategies that we've seen thus far, that the Terran Protoss are just doing sounder strategies, better implemented strategies. And then the side issues of Zerg strategies having some trouble if the Mulus can't harass well, which would be something that has gotten some investment in over time, but not really as much as, for example, the Dragoon Micro of Alacutus or McGrave. Those have really seen more work on them than the Mulus Micro has. We've seen more recently, for example, that McGrave's author has been working on Mulus Micro for Zergbot, the ability to exploit defenses, get around cannons and turrets, and really take advantage of those weaknesses. And it's very good at it. The author put in the time that similar to what he did for his Dragoons, and they're showing results. I think if more authors were to take that approach, we'd see more results for the Zerg world. I'll cite another thing that's kind of easier about Zerg compared to other races, placing buildings, which is like the least exciting or interesting part of StarCraft as a spectator. Like, oh, we're going to put my pylons, we're going to put my supply depots. But the way the game is balanced around the maps, it's important to do that intelligently. And it's much easier for Zerg to do this than Terran and Protoss because there are only a few buildings that you need to place well, and the penalty for placing them imperfectly is lesser than, for example, you know, a Protoss that doesn't pylon wall its expansion and lets a bunch of vultures in, or a Terran that doesn't leave a gap for its Marines to run through and kiting zealots, or for example, a Protoss that runs out of pylon power, or a Terran that runs out of base space to place its buildings. And it's a piece of work that Zerg doesn't have to do nearly as much as Terran and Protoss. And there are lots of little factors like this. Larva management is, you know, a lot easier than a lot of these things. So pros and cons of each of the races. And I think if Zerg simply got as much of the attention and time investment as the other races, that it would be performing at least as strongly. And frankly, if I had to place a bet on which race with ideal play would be stronger than the others, I think it would be Zerg. I think even just in the human pro scene, it's commonly commented that if, you know, everyone had a 1,000 APM or infinite multitasking, that Zerg would outplay the other races because, for example, Zerglings are probably the most cost-effective unit in the game, but you can only select 12 of them at a time, and that they need to be micro to form surrounds so they don't just conga line into a death trap, but then doing that takes more clicks, takes more APM, more attention in the hands of the bot. Maybe that's broken. Jay's blog, The Satirist, has a good discussion of this, where he asks, what happens when you control over more than 11 mutas perfectly? Right now, there's only, you know, maybe 20 humans in the world that can micro two control groups of Mulisks without performing much worse than one control group. What happens when you can do that somewhat effortlessly? What happens when you can control 30 Mulisks perfectly? What happens when you can split Mulisks off that have been irradiated perfectly? How does the game change? So I think for a lot of reasons, Zerg have substantial advantages, which if the time investment goes in from the authors, that they'll be stronger. And I think also because the level of Zerg play on the ladder right now is not that great, the other bots are less tuned against Zerg play. You know, for example, I know that Protoss versus Zerg in human land is Purple Wave's weakest matchup. If you as a human want to go in and beat Purple Wave, play Zerg. And that's true for a lot of bots. So there's a lot of opportunity for Zerg authors. I really think if you put in the time commitment that they will, without too much difficulty, be top performers. Now, a separate issue, and again, I think we mentioned this a bit last week, is that the tournament structure doesn't necessarily reward Zerg play. So you can't just look at win percentage round robin formats as a metric measure of Zerg play. But head-to-head matchups, knockout tournaments, and to a lesser extent, Elo on the ladder will help indicate the level of Zerg play. I think something that would help a lot would be matchmaking, a ladder that has Elo ratings but also has matchmaking, such that most of your games are played against people of a similar skill level. because it's easier to upset Zerg versus Zerg than it is to upset, for example, Terran versus Terran. You see that in pro play as well, for example. Like, Terran's trying to beat Flash have a very, very hard time. Flash, that's an easy matchup. Versus, Zerg versus Zerg, which is a lot more volatile. One engagement could go badly and swing the whole game. So I think with better evaluation criteria and more developer investment, you will see Zergs top of the ladder, no problem. I don't think it's anything structural about the race.
Yeah, I have to agree on basically most of the points you said. But we are not there yet. And there are counters to everything you said, because this is StarCraft. But yeah, I think maybe just a lack of developer, well, not lack of, but Terran and Protoss bots have received more development time. That's probably an objective truth. What I feel in the grand scheme, I'm tweaking the matchmaking all the time on Schnell, but since we don't have that many ranked games, it is hard to see. I decided that I will tweak it like every 1,000 games now, because that's a reasonable number of games that given our number of bots to actually tweak something. And I also want to do something like I said before, that competition drives innovation, and I want more and more authors to participate and have a kind of a reserve of bot authors to build up, because people do abandon these projects, they move on, they want to do other stuff, and others need to take their place if we want a healthy and growing scene. And for that, I think first of all, we need to increase the visibility of this scene, both Schnell and SSCIT both. And I've been constantly thinking about ways of doing that, but I'm going to let you talk now.
There have been some great questions in chat, which I'd like to get to in a second. But I first like to add the disclaimer that I'm talking about time investment in these bots. So I don't want to diminish the effort of Zerg authors, but I will point out that a number of the Protoss and Terran authors are like particularly hard-driven competitors who put in very, very large amounts of time. So it's not that the Zerg authors aren't, putting in a great effort and doing great work and making great bots, but that a couple of Protoss and Terran authors at the top of the ladder have been really, really big time commitments. Or for example, Seda, which is a work of a 8+ person team. Ketrock and Chai is asking, does the Zerg meta look anything like human Zerg play? Do we see late game defilers? There are some bots that use defilers. There's some bots that use Dark Swarm and Plague. I think the meta diverges way earlier than that. That a lot of the Zerg bots have trouble to even getting to that point in the game. So, for example, like a very common the most common opening in Zerg versus Terran, for example, is 12 hatch. You make some drones, you get an overlord, you take the expansion with a hatchery before you build a spawning pool. And there's a common opener by Terran, maybe not the most common, but maybe one of the second or third most common openers. You build a barracks on 8, which is a fast barracks. You cut workers, and then you bunker rush a Zerg that opened a hatchery first. And there are zero Zergs in the ladder that can defend against that. None. So the most common opener in Zerg versus Terran play dies to a number of top Terran bots every time, or very close to every time, because it doesn't have the basic ability to get out of the opening. Or, for example, a lot of Terran bots right now don't build enough turrets against Mutalisks. They have insufficient defenses that a human would abuse and punish them for. But Zerg bots currently don't punish them for that. So the Terran bots get away with murder in the mid game by making a ton of fast tech, a ton of barracks and factories, just doing all the stuff because they have all this money that they didn't spend on turrets. And then the Zergs often just wind up dying at, the 8 to 9 minute mark before you even get to defilers. And that's this kind of issue pops up in a number of matchups, but especially the Zerg matchups, where the Zergs aren't even getting to the point of the game where you would get defilers in healthy shape against other top competition. So this is why I say that the meta will converge on human play before possibly diverging, because defilers are clearly a very powerful, potent unit in the late game, but you have to get there in reasonable shape for them to even make a difference. And I think that's going to improve with time. I think a number of the current Zerg bots are getting closer and closer to that. Krona is improving very rapidly. McGrave Z is improving very rapidly. Styx is very strong. Maybe we'll see the authors, Killerbot and Proxy release some new updates and take those bots to the next level. But I think we need to see that happen before defilers can be more of a relevant unit in the meta.
All right. Yeah, just wanted to give you some time to finish. It's yeah, these silences are usually edited out after the cast because it is kind of hard to not interrupt each other.
I understand. I'll leave you speechless with my
Yes, absolutely, you did. And not much to add there, to be honest, from my side. So let's move on from the Zerg discussion. There were two more things that I wanted to mention that happened in the past few weeks. Two streams, one with Zero, the famous mustache stream, when we had these terrible, terrible quarantine mustaches, and yeah. But Zero played some pretty nice games against bots, and I like that. And I think it's still up the still up on Zero's channel. I don't know, but I asked him to put it on YouTube. We will see. And the other one is definitely on YouTube. It is by Master Ray, the author of SCR Chart. He only lost one game, and that was against a four pool bot. It was so funny. But the games themselves were interesting.
Yeah, these streams are a lot of fun. It's fun to see people encounter the bots for the first time, not knowing what to expect, and being surprised in a variety of ways. Especially when the bots do some sort of crazy cheese. It's fun to watch.
I find that there are two categories of people. One is what we just described, that okay, let's try this out, and then surprise, oh, how many different things these bots can do. And maybe they get beaten, maybe they not, but generally find it interesting. And the other is playing two games, oh, bots are not good, and therefore this is stupid, blah, 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 blah. That's the two categoric responses I always get, and yeah. The second part I'm not fond of.
It's funny that the expectations that people have coming in for these bots tend to be either one of two things. Either they're anchored by expectations for the built-in AI, which some players accurately remember as being very weak for good reasons. It's not the fault of the original authors. People didn't understand StarCraft at the time and had to be able to run seven of them on a Pentium 90. So the original built-in AI is very weak, and some people are expecting these bots are going to play like those. And some people are anchored by expectations of AlphaStar, where
Yeah.
you're like, oh, yeah, why aren't these bots at Grandmaster level play? Why aren't they not using neural networks? Things like that. Then you also have folks who come in and they expect that they're going to play like the built-in AI, but then also remember the built-in AI being very good because they haven't actually played against it since they were new. When they're new players, they were getting run over by the built-in AI. So they look at a bot that's, multiple times better, that could beat multiple built-in AIs in one versus three, and then look at the bots play against a human that's very strong and say, well, these bots are terrible. The built-in AI is better. So it's funny watching those expectations play out. People come in with very different expectations.
And of course, guys in the chat are experts in bot development as well. Let's not forget that. All
People
right.
on the internet, toxic as always.
Yeah, welcome to the internet, I guess. Another point. I'm jumping a little bit back and forth. I was thinking about like casting snail games. I probably won't do it myself, although I've been streaming other stuff and might as well stream some snail games and comment them. But yeah, casting is not something I consider my profession. But if anyone wants to do it, there is the replay browser. Grab any replay you like and just cast it. I will even give you a shout out in any channel. So yeah, definitely do that. And the other stuff, maybe it's a little bit early for it, but there is not much obstacles in a way of having a 24/7 stream of Snail games like SSCIT does. I don't think that's well, the technical like the infrastructure is definitely there. We can just replicate that. I'm not sure we have enough interesting games to pull that off. Maybe a little bit more replay slash game analysis is needed and some game filtering before we do that.
I think in general, watching bots play from SSCIT is a trip, especially for people who haven't seen them before, because those bot games can be pretty funny. Bots could do some pretty silly, goofy things. So I think automated stream of Bot versus Human cast would be entertaining to watch. It's also a nice thing to have up in the background. I think a lot of people, the way they enjoy SSCIT is having up on one screen while they're doing work on another screen and then peeking in when things are getting silly or interesting.
Well, it definitely would be interesting. I fear two things need to be done. First of all is just filter some games, because people do submit practice games when they quit in the first 10 seconds. Obviously, we don't want to see that. And there are just derpy games in the general sense. And the problem is that not all games are interesting. Although if it's a 24/7 stream, maybe that's the expectations are kind of lower. Like if you put up a disclaimer that yes, this is an automated replay showing thing, then okay, I don't expect interesting games all the time and live coverage of it.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Medry SC Twitch stream, which plays old pro games 24/7 on a loop. But a lot of people tune into that. A lot of people have fun with that. And these are games that are. These are very old VODs. They're often like, you know, 160 by 120 pixels. But you know, people tune into that. People have a good time watching that. It's StarCraft is just kind of the flow of StarCraft makes it a nice background or brief tune in kind of watching.
Well, it is of a little bit low on the list, but yeah, it's something that I've been an idea I've been toying with, and yet again circling a little bit back. Getting more people in the scene and getting more awareness, the other part is providing more developer resources. We still don't have a very good tutorial that we have made some advancements in that area, but we still don't have a comprehensive tutorial or a very good guide that helps you build your bots. And yeah, I don't have infinite time, and that's something that I want to do. Maybe some bot coding on stream would help, and I encourage every author that just do it on stream or record or something. So just create content and put it on the internet. It doesn't have to be good, or doesn't have to be particularly like well produced. It's the more the better.
I'll say for folks who are excited about StarCraft AI, who are, you know, watching these casts, watching these streams. And who want to get involved, there's lots of ways to do it. There's, as you say, there's lots of tutorial content that can be created, lots of tooling that can be created. For example, like a replay browser, an automated 24/7 stream of replays is something you could put together without too much difficulty by modifying the OpenBW replay viewer. There's needs for these libraries. The ones that get written get used a lot. They have very substantial roles in the scene. So if you're interested in this, you don't want to go out and make a complete bot, you don't have to. There are ways to contribute that aren't making a bot. As you say, making tutorial content, doing casting games, working on libraries if you're coding, things like that. And if anyone's interested, I encourage you to drop by the SSCAIT Discord. There's probably going to be a link in either the description, but there's also one on the Brood War API GitHub. Drop by Discord, see what's going on, and ask how you can help. And there's lots of ways to do it.
Yeah, SSCIT and or the Schnee Discord. SSCIT is more developer focused, and basically that's why we have a separate Discord for Schnee. That's more for the gamers and the users, and I intend to keep it that way.
Hey, join both.
Yeah, join both. Discord. Joining Discord servers does not cost you anything, just a click.
Just make sure you mute notifications from every other server so you're only notified about the StarCraft stuff and you're notified about it constantly.
Yeah, and just close any distractions and just remove everyone from your life and only concentrate on bot development. There is only bot development now.
We don't need human friends anymore because we're friends with bots and Chanel plushies.
Yes, exactly. Friends are overrated anyway. So, yeah, if I had infinite time, I would do all of this, casting Schnee games, doing coding streams and such, but I barely have enough time to Schnee as it is. Alright, that's all the StarCraft topics that I prepared today. And I kind of, oh yeah, actually one more thing that I wanted, a piece of good news. I've been talking with some of the old bot authors, like bots that haven't been updated in years, and some of them said that oh, they like how the scene developed and they want to get back into it. So we will see some new bots very soon, or old bots renewed very soon.
You know, a few times folks who haven't been in the community for a little while pop their head in and are surprised to find out that their bots are still appreciated and admired. And it's very much the case. So a lot of the even the older bots that may not be as strong as anymore, they've been very big inspirations or sources of code or ideas for future authors or for gameplay styles. So I'm really excited whenever an author of an older bot comes back and peeks their head in the community and maybe even releases an update. It's very fun every time.
It's some of the older bots are still good benchmarks. I think IceLab is the best example. It's still a quite a good bot.
Absolutely, and really, even bots that aren't as strong on the ladder can serve pretty useful purposes. Some of them execute unique strategies that you don't see elsewhere. One of the best cannon rushes today is from a bot is from Ire, which was last updated, I think, 2013, and it's still one of the strongest cannon rush bots out there. It's something that if you want to prepare your bot against all different strategies the humans might throw at it, you want to test against that. You want to test against that cannon rush because it does it in a way that no other bot does. And some of the older bots like IceLab, I think Skynet is possibly the most powerful very old bot. Last updated 2013, and it's a challenge for humans to play against, and it's a challenge for bots to play against. My bot still loses games to Skynet on occasion, despite many many hours of testing and preparation against it. It's so fundamentally strong in a lot of ways that it's never easy to beat.
Oh yeah, I think I lost games against that, but then again, I'm not that good.
Jaeger cites the example of Marine Hell, which was a project made back in 2017 to be kind of a how much of a bot can I write in one night exercise. The author wrote Marine Hell in about 5 hours, one night. And it's a very basic bot. It makes some Marines, it makes a bunker, puts the Marines in the bunker, and then makes waves of 50 Marines and attacks. Very simple, very basic, but it's actually, I think, one of the best examples of a bot that plays a complete game that you can look at. And you can kind of digest all the code that's in it in, 15 minutes and understand what it takes to make a bot. And then Jaegers has also used that as a test bed for the JBoppy framework, which is a drop-in replacement for the BW Mirror framework that Marine Hell is based on. So even a miniature bot like that has played a big role in the community over the years.
Yeah, it has its place. It has its place. I actually use Marine Hell as a testing bot. If you upload a bot to Schnell, your bot will be evaluated against Marine Hell. All right. I think let's move on to the last topic I prepared for today, and it is not quite StarCraft related. It's kind of I tend to avoid reflecting to current events because it is my view that if you just listen back to the podcast a year from now, then local, well, not local, but actual events will hold very little significance, and you are not really entertained by those. Like if I listen back to something from just a random example to 2016 and hear about, I don't know, election stuff, it's just not current, not relevant, and not interesting. But one thing that affects us, and I think we should talk about it in a general sense and not reflecting to current events, is kind of isolation slash mental health things, and how to adapt to that. And we've been having some conversations about that, and well, sitting at home and just staring at the monitor for all day without even the option to not do that, it's not good for your mental health. And I don't know then how you've been handling this recently.
I think I was holding the wrong control button.
On yeah, my probably because for, you
voice were activation.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's been a little tough. I definitely have come to realize some of the things that I value and have missed during times of quarantine. You know, one of the little things is walking around with the mask on. I come to realize how much just the smell of being outside is one of the joys of being outside. You know, it's not just the sunlight and you know, the greenery, but also just the smell of fresh air. And walking around with the mask help me appreciate how much I miss that. And yeah, I miss, you know, miss spending time with my friends, being in the same room with folks. I think in general, maybe in some ways long term, it'll help folks focus in on the things that really matter to them. You know, the outdoors, the company of friends, over, you know, the superficial day to day nonsense of life, as a lot of that disappears and dissipates through the changed environment. But I'm looking forward to, you know, better times.
Yeah, it will pass. It's like, I think just the mental block of not having the option to go to your friend's house, because I do pretty good in isolation, to be honest. But knowing the fact that I can just call a friend and probably organize something and go over his house, that just the knowledge and like the confidence that I can do that puts me at ease. But now it's explicitly forbidden, and that frustrates people. And with our global communication and the internet being what it is right now, everyone sitting home and getting frustrated all the time. And I think it's more of a perception problem than the world actually being that terrible of a place. But regardless, the fact is that we are getting frustrated and we are getting angry at each other and getting more irritated. And I think we should counteract that. First of all, by having communities that are more supportive and more nice. I know people have a bad, people tend to have problems behaving in online communities. Yeah, I think that helps. And just try to find replacements for face-to-face meetings, and just basic human contact is something you well can do without, but it's like it vastly improves your general well-being if you have something to talk to even five minutes a day. At least that's my experience, and that's my opinion on that.
I've seen some discussion of how the less significant contacts, human contacts you have in life, add a lot to our well-being. You know, just the waving hi to the guy at the corner store, or, you know, passing by someone in the neighborhood, someone you don't know very well, but, you know, just those little interactions throughout the day add a lot of richness to life. And you know, with folks cooped up more, it's sad to see them missing. I also feel the difference in walking down the street, whereas before, you know, passing by people or being in line for something, you know, is one of the reasons I like living in cities, because I like being close to people. I like being surrounded by people. And when suddenly other people start to feel almost like a liability, or you have responsibility to keep a distance from them, it takes a bit of a toll. It's tough.
Yeah, it's like best example is just petting a stranger's dog. It's such a simple act, but you can't or shouldn't really do that right now. And
well, some of the upshot is we have the internet right now. For example, there's life can be tougher in a lot of ways, and you know, I think we could all take relief in knowing that you know, quarantine is something that's only probably temporary, that we're going to go back to our normal lives before too long. And in the meantime, it's better to be cooped up at home with the internet than cooped up without the internet. You know, imagine going through this without it. I think we'd be all going a lot stir crazier at home.
I'm actually on the opposite opinion on this, and I can provide you examples why I don't think that's true. I think we have to information overload, and we have a lot of fear-mongering. And, you know, there is a book called Decameron, which is written in the time of the Black Plague. It is basically a bunch of rich people who went into a villa and waited out the plague, and told stories to stories to each other. And the book itself, it's not not that interesting, the content of it, but generally the feeling is that if you're isolated and maybe in a smaller group of friends, and you don't hear day to day, because like hearing that, oh, I don't know, 100 people died in Botswana, that doesn't affect your life in any way, but it's still bad news, and hearing 1,000 little pieces of information day by day like that, it stresses you out subconsciously. And of course, we have these social media giants and various algorithms that serve and feed us with constant negative information, because negative information you pay attention to. It's never. When was the last time when you turned on the news and the newscaster said everything is all right, everyone is happy, there is nothing wrong? And I don't remember that ever happening. It's always some serious face, exclusive reporting, breaking news. Everything is so fucking important all the time. And yeah. And it's a deliberate strategy, because if you're afraid, you pay attention. And if you're a new station, then if your viewers pay attention, they don't change the channel. So it's a deliberate tactic. And well, we can debate the morality of it, but it is a fact of life that this exists. And turning off the news can help. And I think in that regard, the internet is maybe more bad than good right now.
It's an idea from a few years back, but the idea of an information diet being part of one's well-being, of taking care to control what influences you're exposed to on a daily basis, because they do affect your mood and they do affect your thinking. You know, if you use social media, you know, don't follow toxic people. Don't follow people who are negative all the time. Follow people who mean something to you. Follow people that you want to be connected to and who exposure to whom makes you feel good. Doesn't mean you can't, you know, not learn things, but certainly there's lots of alarmist sources out there, alarmist people, you know. Make sure that what you see in day-to-day life is going to be constructive. It's going to encourage you to be your best self, to not be focused on scandal or focused on the Kardashians or anything that doesn't matter. Focus on the what matters in life. Focus on the people who matter in life, and tune out the nonsense.
And when in doubt, err on the side of cat pictures.
Always.
And that's why I think that communities should be more like walled gardens than anything, because, you know, if there is something in the global consciousness, like the events going on right now, the community is not moderated in a good way, then it permeates everything. You know, you see these stupid memes about local events. If you go to any Discord server or any channel, and they don't help anyone, there is literally the entire internet talking about that. If I go to, for example, SSCIT, I want to talk about and read about developing bots, not the nonsense that is going on. And I think you should compartmentalize better in that regard. And yeah, I absolutely agree. We should have more Monty Python news in our lives. And okay, sorry for the serious tone, guys. But I feel this is something that needs to be addressed. And I really hope we did it in a way that will be valuable when you listen back to this episode at a later date. I deliberately did not name any current events going on, and let's not do that.
I'll propose one idea. If you're, you know, in quarantine and you have a lot more time on your hands, it's a good time to learn something new. It's a good time to try something you haven't done before, which you can't do from the comfort of your home. There's a lot of things you can try for the first time.
For example,
the obvious one in front of us is bot coding, for example. But, you know, learn a new skill, learn to do something you haven't done before. Pick up reading in a genre you haven't done before, the kind of time that quarantine opens up your life could be a gift. You know, it's maybe not one you would have chosen for yourself, but there's ways to make the most of it. Pick up something new and add something to your life that when you come out of it, maybe your life will be richer. Maybe you'll have done something or learned something that you wouldn't have otherwise. Take advantage of the time.
Yeah. And web development is something that can occupy your time. The problem is that we are not machines and we can't just code 12 hours a day. Believe me, I tried. You kind of need human contact, because if you don't, you start to question, start to say, okay, why bother? Nothing. Why bother? Why should I do anything? No one will see it. And it's our stupid monkey brain talking. But still, this is how it is. All right, enough seriousness for now. I think I felt that with the times being that what they are, this was important. But let's get back to StarCraft and memes. And actually, I kind of said everything about current StarCraft news and topics that I wanted to. I don't know, then, do you have anything that you want to talk about or we didn't talk about?
I'd like to highlight that the COG StarCraft tournament registration deadline is coming up.
Oh, that's true. It's true. I hope we will see some new and improved versions of bots.
Yeah, the submission deadline, or sorry, the registration deadline is June 19th, and the submission is July 17th. So, if you've been working on a bot, or you've got a bot that you've made before and haven't been updating for a little bit, yeah, go register. Can't hurt. You can always withdraw before the event if you aren't feeling up to it. But if you want to register, deadline's coming up soon. And it's the first tournament of the season. It's a good way to, start getting involved. And, you still have a bit over a month to prepare, even if you haven't prepared anything to date in 2020. So it's always an exciting time of year, because you have COG, you have A tournament, you have SSCIT, and in fairly quick succession. And, it's a 6-month time frame, but in Botland, it's a pretty quick succession. And it's a lot of time where we see a lot of the new innovations, and it's a good time to work on bots.
Yeah, and a wise man once said that time is short and code is long. So you always have less time than you think.
And, you can also get started by forking an existing bot and making changes to it, personalizing it, making it your own. So even if you haven't started your own bot yet, you can get up and running pretty quickly by working with the existing coding tools available.
All right, I think that should be a wrap here. I'm a little bit out of steam here, and I think we said everything we wanted to say. Would you agree?
It's been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on, Chanko.
Of course, I enjoyed it, and I hope you will be back soon. And let's give like 2 minutes for the people in the chat to ask questions, and then just end the podcast for now.
A little while back, we had Ketrock ask whether StarCraft Remastered brought any new authors to the scene. And the answer is I don't actually know. Remastered came out in, I think, mid-2017, if I'm recalling correctly. And, authors cover all sorts of different places. I actually couldn't pin down too closely how they're finding the scene. I think the posts on Reddit are a big source of that, folks finding the SSCIT cast on Reddit. People are coming from all sorts of different directions. We have some folks who came in from Chanel who found out about the StarCraft AI scene through your work and spreading the message about Chanel, and then came in on the bot development side and are, starting their bots or tinkering around. So I'm actually not sure whether Remastered specifically brought people in, but definitely Remastered renewed interest in Brood War play, made a lot easier. The ergonomics of Remastered are very nice. So definitely helped reinvigorate the scene. The pro scene, a lot of the pro players have very popular streams, and Remastered played a big part in extending this game that we all love for many more years to come.
Yeah, remastered. I don't think it brought too many bot outers either. It's kind of a separate thing. And I really hope I will see the first bot that was inspired by Schnell. And that will be a sense of accomplishment for me personally. Well, of course, it's a bigger accomplishment for the bot author himself or herself, but yeah, still. So, no more questions. Thanks everyone for tuning in. I will put out the edited version shortly. And thank you, Dan, for being here. And yet again, I hope you will be a guest many more times.
Well, thanks again for having me, Shanko. Hope everyone has a nice weekend.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the Undermind, the Schnell Project, or Making Computer Do Things, you can do so on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/mcdt and you can select your pledge there. And a shout out to my higher level patrons, Forte and Bruce Nielsen. Thank you guys, you made a lot of this possible.